Hi everyone, and welcome to Let's Get Visible, a podcast for small business owners, helping them to grow, have a sustainable business, and get more visibility online. I'm Dawes Brown, and I'll be bringing you SEO and digital marketing tips, as well as interviews and conversations with other small business owners. So, let's get started.
So today's episode is all about empowering high-performing teams. And to discuss this topic, I'm joined by Shelley McElroy. Her background has always involved large groups of people and fast-paced environments. Media and communications and hospitality have been where she has thrived. She has led large teams of up to 120 people in previous roles as a general manager and licensee. Her in-depth understanding of people from work, education, and travel experiences, she can work in a wide range of industries with people from all backgrounds. She's particularly passionate about maximizing individuals' potential, which results in a greater contribution to the team. Her strength is communication skills and a deep passion for leading teams model, which she uses as a blueprint for both her professional and personal life. So let's welcome to the Let's Get Visible podcast, Shelley. Yay!
Oh, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Thank you for being part of this podcast. Now, we do have a couple of questions and bits to go through to keep us on track. And I'd really love to begin, as mentioned in the introduction, you have a background in media and communications and hospitality. Now, was that a planned career option or did it evolve from something quite different?
Oh, so funny. So I guess the hospitality part was certainly... I got my first job when I was 12. Back in Ireland, they send us out to work very young. So right. Went into, my stepdad was working in a restaurant and he was like, we need some help on Saturdays. We're looking for a busser to help do the tables. Do you want to come into work? And I think I used to get paid £2 an hour or something. So I started my Saturdays spent in with him and I just loved it. Like, I loved talking to people. I loved the pace at which you work. And I think it taught me how to work hard. Like, it's not an easy job in terms of you've really got to be on your toes all the time. And through university, and I did a Bachelor of Science in Media and Communications and specialized in television production.
Oh, wow.
So I did a bit of, and we did photography and radio and that type of thing as well through those modules. Through that, I worked the whole way through to pay for my education.
Of course.
And hospitality just served me well and I served it well. So I think part of the Irish charm and nature in which we communicate, just being in a room full of people, talking, making sure their experience is on point. I just loved it from such a young age. And when I got a bit older through uni and wanted to go traveling, I realized it's something I can do anywhere in the world.
That's very true.
Yeah. So it kind of went hand in hand. I don't think I ever really thought I'd have a career in hospitality, but once I started traveling, I realized it's actually what I loved doing most. So when I landed in Sydney, I applied for a job that I was just working as a waitress for a few months, and the opportunity came up for me to become a manager in that space, which would mean I would also get a 457 visa. So a 3-month backpacking trip has turned into a 13-year adventure.
Oh, wow. And lucky Australia that you did transition and land here, and yes, went into again the hospitality industry. And then what happened from there?
So I think I'd done managing back in Ireland. I'd done supervising, team leader, that kind of stuff. And I think just coming to Australia with that experience and with that knowledge, and I I think I was, you talk about when you're in the right place at the right time and meeting the right people.
Yeah.
I had an English general manager, Jeremy Milner, and we got on like a house on fire, and he was like, "You're unstoppable." And I was like, "I'm unstoppable with you leading me." We just worked well together. He trusted me. He empowered me. And from that, from working with him for a number of years, I had progressed from what initially was employed as a waitress into a general manager role. So it started by covering someone's annual leave for six weeks. And when they came back, they were like, "You've actually bet a couple of records here. We're going to keep you where you were and we're going to progress him to his next stage." Yeah, it's definitely been, it sounds like it was all a stroke of luck. There was definitely hard work and blood, sweat and tears. But I think just working with good people that saw something in me and being able to just give it 100% when you're at your best capacity, when you can share ideas, when you can challenge what you're seeing in the workplace. It just evolved from there.
Fantastic. And with you transitioning from Ireland, and you have such a beautiful accent, by the way, transitioning from Ireland and moving to Sydney, Australia, were there any main differences that you could see between people, culture, and how that impacted your work and life?
I think the biggest thing, as we know, Ireland has a pretty significant drinking culture, or did have pre-pandemic. The big difference for me was, like, Irish people absolutely, they know how to enjoy themselves. It's all about the banter and the good times.
Yes.
What we don't do as well as the Australians is the lunch culture, the long lunches, and again, it's probably shifted slightly from the pandemic, but that was the biggest thing. I couldn't believe people were having 2 or 3 hour lunches. So usually the fun starts from 5 o'clock at home.
Right.
And there seemed to be a bit of a blurred extension on a Friday of a long lunch would just roll into the weekend. I think what definitely is brought out in Australia and in Ireland is just that multicultural diversity of talent, diversity of people, and the ability just to work with people from literally every corner of the globe.
Yes.
In terms of what you'd see from some of our chefs and front of house staff and different managers, you definitely learn how to communicate with different cultures. Yeah. And I think hospitality is just one of those industries that has all of that under one roof.
Has it all, has everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you're now working with leading teams, and so transitioning from that, I guess, hospitality background and moving into your current role. Can you tell us just a little bit more about your position, the process, and how the work that you do helps others, and most importantly, leads teams, helps people to lead teams?
Yeah, absolutely. Back about 7 years ago, I worked with the Merivale Group, which is one of, I think it's probably the biggest hospitality group now in the Southern Hemisphere. It's owned by Justin Hems, and he's recently bought a huge amount of venues in addition to his current portfolio. I worked as a general manager of a Voloco hotel CBD in the Beresford Hotel. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I started my own family. So coming back from maternity leave into a general manager role, where family support overseas, I just knew I wasn't really able to make that commitment to the nights, and there was certainly some flexibility offered at that time. But what happened was, there was a, coming from that kind of general manager experience, mm-hmm. we had huge growth in the company, and we knew we were going to expand by a third. So we were going to hire an additional minimum 1,000 people to operate all these new venues. And I sat down with my director and I said, "Look, I don't think I can come back as a general manager, but is there something that I could do in terms of like training and development, help the new managers? Could we implement a program to help upskill them? Is there ways that we could?" Sometimes in hospitality, if you've been there a while, you can get given a set of keys to be the manager, but you might be missing, you may not know how to read a P&L, or you may not know how to fully be in control of your labor and rostering and those types of things. So I was like, is there an opportunity to upskill these people as they come in? And so I became the training and development advisor for the group,
which
was just hugely exciting. And we implemented a Cert 4 in business for that supervisor level and sous chef level, and a diploma in leadership and management for the more senior operation managers. So it just was a perfect storm, and it meant people could be educated if they hadn't been before, or they had an opportunity to upskill or further their education than what they currently had while doing on-the-job training.
Yeah.
So it was a really great opportunity. And in that time, we had engaged leading teams to help us, because with that massive growth, there was going to be a stretch in culture.
Of course.
So preempting that was coming.
Yeah.
We had engaged with them just to help refine the culture, to get all our ducks in a row. And if the bandwidth was stretched, what did that look like? How do we induct new people? How do we make sure we're getting the right cultural fit and not just the best person on paper? Mm-hmm. And we did work with them for a couple of years. And I just, being a participant in the program, like, it changed how I thought. It changed how I questioned things. It made me, I think the difference was I felt like I had gone from being a good, competent manager to a leader in the business. Mm-hmm. And what it was, understanding empowerment and understanding how to get the best out of people, and also understanding that not one approach suits everyone.
Yes.
So that you have to adjust your leadership style, really have that bird's eye view of what's going on and what people need, and be listening to the subtext that's happening. And it just really opened my eyes, broadened my, if you imagine that you're wearing a pair of binoculars, it was that peripheral vision had just been highlighted. And it just led to great things in the business. And so I was always interested in what they did. And I kept in touch with the facilitator that I worked with. Mm-hmm. And I just noticed one day, I was literally, I can't remember what exactly I was doing, but I just noticed in an advert popped up and it had just been released. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm the best person on paper for this, but I'm going to throw my hat in the ring.
Yeah.
And I was just, I had done this training and development role. So I had experience in facilitation, but it was more a training avenue.
Yes.
But they're kind of, they're not the same skill set, but they're transferable skills.
Yeah.
And I went for the interview. So the interview process was something extraordinary. So what we did was you had to come, the very first interview was to bring along three items of personal significance and tell a story about them. So I took along my three items. One was a bucket list, one was my wedding ring, and one was a family photo. And so I told the stories, and as the questions and stories were unfolding through the interview, at the end of finishing the presentation, the three directors just said to me, "So what questions have you got for us?" It was really, so I was asking them about what I'd seen on the website and what does a standard work week look like and tell me a bit about the team and all those types of questions. But it was really them seeing if I was the right cultural fit and me having the opportunity to see if that was still something I wanted to proceed with.
Yeah.
It wasn't a standard interview. You're kind of grilled on situational stuff. What would you do if this happens? How did you deal with a conflict in the workplace? Those types of questions. There was none of that.
Oh, wow.
And it was quite unique. And the second stage of the interview was when we got to the final four. Mm-hmm. They brought us all into a room together and we did a leading teams workshop for the day. So we had been given time to present. We had to bring along a 90-day business plan. If you get this job, what do you plan to do? And we had to bring along one of the leading teams models and facilitate that to the group. Now, when you did that, you got feedback from the three people you were competing against and the three directors.
Wow.
So it was quite a unique experience. We had done partner talks at the start. So you'd also developed a bit of a relationship or trust with somebody who was also going for the role.
Oh, wow. So,
yeah, it was an incredible experience. And the feedback that you get from other facilitators, if you do a workshop with a group, and it's not to disgrunt their view or opinion, but it's very different to the feedback you would get from a different facilitator. I didn't realize at the time, every time I made a point, I clapped.
Ah.
one of the candidates picked up on it. She said, "Every time you make a point, you clap." And I was like, "Oh my God, I've never had that feedback before."
I do, yeah.
Yeah, and I realized I did it. And when you're aware of something, you have the opportunity to address it. So
that's right.
We were coming out and saying goodbye to each other, like hugging and wishing each other. When we presented our 90-day business plan, again, we got feedback from the participants and feedback from the directors. And at the very end of the interview, they said to us, based on what you've seen today, if the decision was yours, who would you choose and why?
Oh, wow.
Openly shared that in the group of who we chose. It was, again, another opportunity to practice giving feedback, to be really succinct with your message. Yeah. And I loved, like, even I'm delighted I got the role, but even if I hadn't have got the role, I knew I was better off having gone through that experience.
Yes.
So it was a learning for all of us. And strangely, like I've kept in touch with those people that I interviewed with at that time. So it's 2.5 years down the track. So yeah. It was just an incredible experience. And I hoped that I could add value to that business. And for me, luckily on the day, the other three candidates had voted for me. And I got the job offer about 48 hours later. So I was absolutely over the moon and jumped at it with both hands.
Congratulations. And so in the role that you worked incredibly hard for to just get into that position, how is it that you work and what is it that you do with teams?
Yeah, so our purpose is really clear. Our purpose is to help teams and individuals improve their performance. So regardless of what that baseline is, working on the trust within a team to help them become higher performing than they are. So that baseline level can be different for various organizations. And the only assumption we ever make with a group is that they have room to improve and grow. We don't come in and make an assessment. Oh, this group is a 2 or this group is operating at a 4 out of 10. That's up to them to decide what that is for them.
Yes.
But usually when we do work with a group, it's over a minimum of 12 months.
Okay.
And roughly a full day session every month. And we really help them determine what they're trying to achieve, what their key priorities are. We don't need to know the details of the mechanics of what they do. Where we add value is in the dynamic space. So that's in their culture and their behavior. And sometimes in businesses, you go in and you might get a nice welcome pack and it'll have the culture and values, or yes, they might be on the wall. Sometimes if we ask people, what are your core values, or what does culture would we see if we joined this team? Sometimes they don't know. And that's okay, because that gives us a great starting point to go from. Others might know them off by heart, but may not know what they look like in action.
Yeah.
And some businesses are living and breathing them, that you come in and the culture here is X. This is our expectations. And if you're not aligned to this, you will not survive on this team.
Yeah.
So it's just determining that clarity of culture. And, you know, culture ultimately is behavior we accept. So what are the great things that this organization has to offer, and what are some areas of growth for us?
And I think no matter what size your business is, whether you're a solopreneur, so you're running your own, you know, business and show, whether you're part of a team, I think there's always room for improvement.
Yeah. And I think with teams, the Sydney Swans have been a client of ours for close to 20 years.
Oh, wow. Yep.
Yeah, so I think high performance, there's not really a finish line. It's sometimes when we're dealing with clients, they're like, when is this done? And I'm like, it really depends. It depends how far you want to go, because when you get to what we're trying to achieve at the moment, we'll figure out what the next bar raise is.
And absolutely. That's
the aim for that. So high performance is a cycle, and the cycle that we work off, a really simple 4-step process, is learn, commit, do, review. So
hopefully
on the days that clients work with us, they learn something.
Yes.
They'll always make commitments to action. So in between sessions, it's not just waiting on your leading team sessions. It's what you do in between those sessions that really counts.
Yep.
Go and do it, learn, commit, do, and then we'll review. How did we go? What worked? What didn't? If you had your time again, is there something you'd do differently? And sometimes with the pace that business operates at the moment, it's very fast paced. People are working from home. We have the internet at our fingertips.
Yes.
Sometimes we go from project to project and don't actually stop to review. So the next one is already starting. And certainly when I was a participant, I'll never forget it. Melbourne Cup Day is one of the biggest days of the year. Like, all the venues are full to the rafters, bookings, evening, the whole shebang.
Yep.
And we finished Melbourne Cup Day. It was about 6 weeks of prep and planning and organizing and dealing with suppliers and getting the venue ready and the styling and staff are going to be wearing, and everything was on point. We had an incredible day, like literally off the chart records.
Yeah.
And the next morning, marketing came in for a meeting about Christmas. And it was like, oh, celebrate what just happened.
Can I just take a breath?
Yeah. That's just an example from hospitality. But other industries could relate to that with their big projects. And when we actually reviewed, it was, okay, what worked really well? And we were able to capture some really great information that if I moved on as the general manager, you could come in and figure out what worked and what didn't last year. And you might take your spin on it and see something that I missed.
That's it.
Take something to the next level. So if we don't review, we're actually taking that opportunity away to grow the next time we do it.
Yeah, and that's with most things, even in the area that I'm in of SEO and digital marketing. If you don't review, then how do you know what is working, what's not working, and being able to take your campaign to the next level. But I love the way that you said there's really no finish line. You can get from A to B, but then there's always B to C and the next stage and the next, you know, level up. So having that, there's no ceiling really. It's just open-ended, isn't it? And there's always opportunity for improvement, as we said, for individuals, for teams. But yes, so important to reflect and look back on the things that you've done, what worked, what didn't work, so you can realign the bus and ensure that you're going back in the right direction. But one thing that you just raised, which leads me into the next question, was hindsight. So taking a look back on your wonderful career and all the things that you've been able to do and learn and achieve, is there anything that you would actually do differently and why?
Great question. I think some of the highs have definitely been just going for it, throwing myself in the deep end.
Yeah.
I remember when I got promoted to Hotel CBD, it was double this. My team had just grown to double. So I'd gone from a team of 30 to a team of 60.
Right.
And I was like, oh God, can I actually do this? And the beauty of that as well was I was the first female GM in that particular venue. So that was a big fly in the flag moment. And I definitely would confidently back myself, but inside be like, oh my God. So I think in hindsight, the lows have definitely been more self-doubt when you're just unsure, am I the most qualified to do this? Can I? And that doubt creeps in, and then like your thoughts, we would call it talk, your self-talk. If you let it get out of whack, it can really be a detriment to your performance. So when you start to doubt, you sometimes start to behave in a way where, oh, I'm actually not sure, or can I just clarify that, or can I? And that's been some of the real challenges. But on the flip side of that, shaking that off and just being confident, giving it a crack, and not having a fear of failure. So my tagline motto is, I'm either winning or learning.
Oh, I love that.
And I don't mean winning to come first, but a win for me would be if you were on a program and you got a promotion, or if you had a challenge that you were able to overcome and I helped coach you through that, that's a win for me. Or what's the learning? So when things go wrong, I will now review, okay, what have I learned from this? What can I take away? And if a similar scenario happens again, what are the red flags that I missed?
Yeah.
So I think the attitude and how we see things, definitely the perspective. So there's a great expression that your perception is your reality.
That's right.
And just checking that every now and again.
Yep.
Yeah. So is it reality on fact-based, or is it reality that sometimes we can over-dramatize things or
overthink it, over-analyze it? And as you said, it's that imposter syndrome, thinking that I'm not enough. I'm not an expert maybe in this particular area. I don't have enough experience or whatever it is. And yes, if you don't back yourself, you end up backing into a corner really and not giving anything a go. But one thing that really stands out from the time that we've met, and I've known you now for nearly, I think, 3 years or so, and you've always had this really positive outlook and energy. So no matter what you tackle, no one would ever know that you're feeling or thinking those things on the inside, because on the outside, you're just such a positive person and your energy exudes across anyone that crosses your path, whether they're listening to you if you're up on stage or if you're part of a more sort of closed group or small group or intimate team. There's just something about you. There's just this twinkle or positive, magic that happens. And I think other people really pick up on that, and you just put people in a good mood, that story, which is awesome. But you've always been that way. Every single time we've connected or met, there's always just this aura or energy around you where you make everyone else feel really positive and really wanting them to have a go. So I think the role that you're in now is definitely something that was meant to be, because it's just perfect in regards to your personality and what it is that you can show and bring to other people as well.
Yeah, and in support for that, the quote, it's one of Harrison Ford's, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
That's right. I love that one.
That's kind of helped in those moments of doubt. Okay, can we do this? Yes, we can. You just have to, I think we would work on some affirmations with some leaders to help define what they want to do, what they're trying to achieve. And they certainly help with what you visualize yourself in that moment. Do you believe you can do it?
Yeah.
And then just go for it.
Well, you are what you think. That's how I see it. If you're going to think, if you wake up and you're in a negative mode and frame of mind, it's quite likely that the rest of your day is, you know, pretty much going to go around that same tone. No, that's brilliant. And having a chat now about your personal brand and really building that as part of leading teams, what do you think has been the most effective way in order to really elevate your visibility and, build that personal brand?
That's another great question, Doris. When I started, I thought about how we planned the 90-day business plan, and leading teams has been around now for over 25 years, and it's got great reputation in Melbourne, and we're trying to build Sydney a bit more, and we know we'll have 4 facilitators in Sydney come June.
Very cool.
One of the main things that I thought about was like just throwing yourself in the deep end. So I said, if any opportunity comes my way, I'm just going to say yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, if it's aligned to brand and aligned to the purpose of helping teams and individuals improve. But I didn't refuse anything for the first year or two. If I got an invitation to speak at a breakfast or a keynote event, and I just went for it. And I think that presence in just at events, sometimes you don't know who you're going to meet.
That's so true.
Yeah. You know, like we met at an event. So it's, you just don't know who you're going to meet. You don't know what the opportunity is on that day. And sometimes it's a bit of a long game. Sometimes things don't happen overnight. It can take months. It can take a year or two. And I think just being patient with that, and then sharing some of your successes, challenges, I've definitely enjoyed doing a little bit of work on LinkedIn.
So
whether that's connecting with people and certainly the opportunity for Zoom to connect with different people around the country has been time saving and a great way to connect and hear other people's stories.
Yep.
But just sharing, sometimes if you share a good post or an article, people respond and you're nearly surprised. You don't know how it's got to their laptop or their phone, but through somebody that knows them, it's come back and it's generating a good, genuine conversation of if they like the work that you do or how you might be able to help them.
Yeah, beautiful. And networking is such an important component, isn't it, of really building up your brand. And as you said, you never know who's sitting in the audience. So it's always quite exciting and interesting at the same time to go, hey, yeah, there is this opportunity and I'm not sure what the outcome is going to be. Yeah, and I may not be able to measure that ROI right now in this moment, but there are so many things that happen, as you said, being in the right place at the right time.
Yes.
And then building up that profile and that network to the point where perhaps around Sydney, or I'm based down here in Wollongong, but you just need to go to a couple of these things. And then it's almost like this flow on effect. The next time you go to another event, someone will walk up to you and go, oh, I've heard about you. You're such and such, and you do this. And you're like, oh, I've never met this person before. But it's, as you said, that long-term game of really just going out there, trying to say yes to lots of things without necessarily knowing the outcome, but it does build up over time. And I think we're in a culture at the moment where we expect instant results with everything, I think, because maybe the internet is at our fingertips. And so if we have any questions, or if we're trying to do, you know, research about something, well, finding the answer is pretty quick and pretty simple. All we need to do is a Google search. But yeah, it's not until you're either in a role or you're running a business that you realize that things actually take quite like a lot of time. They're not things that just happen overnight. You're not just going to launch a website and then within a couple of weeks you're going to have all these inquiries flooding in. It just doesn't work that way. But yeah, what's your, I'm interested to know, what's your opinion on that, in us really needing those instant results? And maybe this is something you've seen within your work working with teams too. Is there an expectation, do you think, around getting results quickly rather than putting in the hard work and then seeing the results come through a bit longer down the track?
Yeah, and definitely with the work that we do, sometimes I've definitely had some business development meetings and presented a year's work and what that would look like for an organization, and nearly seen an almost heart attack at hand. Some people are looking for a quick tick and flick, going to solve the problem instantly. But in terms of culture and behaviors and the work that we do, it's not an overnight. You won't do a day and it's not going to change. If you were to do one day workshop, I can guarantee you your team would be connected and absolutely have a good day. But is it going to change what you've told me your challenges are?
Yeah.
Not overnight.
No.
So culture, as say, for example, in an organization, and it's a classic one, meetings that are supposed to start on time. One person comes late, all of a sudden there's two or three people coming late, all of a sudden we know a 9 o'clock meeting won't start till 9:15.
Yes.
And it happens over time. It's the norm, it's the new norm, it's behavior that's become accepted. Or sometimes we're waiting on the most senior person to arrive, and so we all are sitting there patiently waiting for the most senior person to come in. So sometimes, because it's happened, teams nearly don't even realize that's now the new norm.
Yes.
It's just the new expectation at work. So fixing something like that would be a small, quick win. Mm-hmm. We'd address it. How are people feeling about it? Sometimes you get things like, oh, it's a bit disrespectful of everybody else's time if we're waiting on one person, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
What's our plan around it? How do we plan to tackle it? And just questioning them to come up with the solution. So we don't come in and present the solutions, but we will question them in a neutral way, respectfully, to ensure that they understand the perspective of various stakeholders or parties in the room. And then what's our best move moving forward? What can we all agree to? So we'd work on like an agreed behavioral framework.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be, we respect each other, therefore we're not going to be waiting on one person anymore.
Yeah.
So it's understanding what's the behavior that's missing underneath, and how does that fix the issue, not the task at hand.
Yeah. And do you think with culture, And I saw this when I worked with a digital marketing agency. The more that it grew and the bigger that it got, the more of those types of cultural issues would arise, because you've started with, for example, 10 people, and that's grown into 15 people, then that's grown into 25 people. And so you're bringing in all of these other cultures and backgrounds and work ethics and all these different things and mixing them into one. And I know for myself, just as you were speaking then, it helped me reflect on what I saw change within that agency.
Yeah.
And really over that 5-year period, what a change in culture there was. And it wasn't for the good of the company or the business. It was actually quite detrimental. So it's such a key point. But do you find that? Do you find that the larger the groups or the teams are, that sometimes there's more of those cultural issues that you can see when you go in and be that fly on the wall, so to speak?
I'm the fly on the wall. I think... To be honest with you, I work with both small and large teams, and yep. often it's similar challenges,
yep.
regardless of size. And it doesn't definitely more people can, because it just expands in terms of time spent and et cetera. But ultimately, a culture of 2 or 3 people can almost have the same challenges as a culture of 150 people.
It depends on the people.
It depends on the people, and yeah. it depends on what they're willing to do or not do to address it.
Yeah.
So
great point.
I don't know if that's answered your question properly. But
yeah, it did. And again, it's just reflecting on one example. But yeah, as mentioned, as you were talking about it, I was going back and going, yes, that's actually what happened within that business as well. And just people running late and being disrespectful of other people's time and that kind of thing. Yeah, it's quite a common thing, I think, that happens just as teams and people evolve in business.
Yeah, and sometimes in particular in organizations where people have been there for a number of years, yeah. like I'm working with a group and there's a lady on the team that has been 48 years employed.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's unheard of these days, hey.
Absolutely unheard of. But yeah. you know, sometimes there can be a tiny bit of resistance, because in that 48 years experience, she's seen a number of things trialed and errored and tested.
Yes.
And so sometimes the resistance can be almost a reluctance to change.
Yeah.
Or it can come across as excuses, like, that won't work here, trust me. And
yes.
it's, well, actually, when you tried it 10 years ago, we didn't have the same systems in place as we did now. So are you willing to give it a go? So it's opening up the space to have those conversations, to understanding
yes.
that, not just that person, but a number of people's perspective. And if this is the finish line that we're aiming for, let's just look at the best avenue to do that.
Yes.
So it might be revisiting something that hasn't worked in the past, but we might have new technology that will enable us to do
something. Yeah, and it's keeping that open mind, isn't it? It's
yeah.
really, the possibilities are endless. There's always options, there's always solutions, but unless you've got the right frame of mind, you know, that you just build up these invisible barriers, I think, sometimes, and just go, not doing it. So it really does come down to mindset. It plays such an important part in that whole picture.
Oh, 100%. And yeah, that growth mindset versus a closed mindset.
Yes.
The difference that can have in it on a team.
Yeah, love it. And are there any final tips? You've shed so much gold, but is there any final tips that you can share with the audience? Something that they can do or take away today that would be useful and helpful in their team or in their business?
Yeah, so I think we spoke a little bit about the review process, and one of the best tools that we have, I believe, is we would sometimes, so say for example, if you and I are working together, and in terms of you giving me feedback or me giving you feedback or you giving me feedback,
yeah,
we have a tool that's called a stop, start, keep. So
okay.
What are one or two things I think you should stop doing?
Mm-hmm.
One or two things I think you should start doing. And what are all the unlimited keeps that you bring to the table? If you weren't to be in the team tomorrow, what are the keeps that we'd be missing? So that can be both mechanical in terms of systems or processes or tasks that you do, but also in the dynamic space, like, oh, actually you implement Friday lunches and it's the only time we get together as a team. Would that happen if you weren't here? Those types of things. So it's an opportunity to give feedback in a clear and concise way.
Yep.
And I've also recently used it with it as a team review. So with an executive team of four, they reviewed their performance. What are one or two things they think they need to stop doing?
Yes.
What are one or two things they think they need to start doing? And what are the keeps and what they bring to this business? And it's just a very effective tool. It's clear, it's succinct. It can be a bit pointy.
Yep.
Great discussion point.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to look into that for myself and book myself in a meeting. So if you see me talking to myself, it is a business meeting. But I love those tools and tips, and they can make such a difference to how you run your business and how effective you can run your business and your teams, which is perfect. Thank you, Shelley.
No worries.
Now, if our audience would like to get in contact with Shelley, I will be adding her contact details and social media links, including that all important LinkedIn profile underneath the episode of today's podcast. But thanks again, Shelley, for making time and spending it with our audience. It's been a pleasure to learn more about you, the amazing work you do, and overall just your positive attitude and energy that just beams from everything that you do. Yes, I can't wait to publish this and share it with our audience as well.
Oh, thank you so much. An absolute pleasure to be here.
Thanks for giving this show a listen, and don't forget to leave your feedback and rating. If you want to learn more about me or my services, please jump on over to letsgetvisible.com.au, where you'll find show notes and links to my social media profiles so you can connect there as well. Okay, well, that's a wrap for another episode, so I'll join you next time on the Let's Get Visible podcast. I'm sorry, you know, man.